Hey guys, and welcome back to the 10 Count. I'm joined with Zach Bentley.
What is up?
And making his return from missing last week, we got Miller McGinn.
What's up, guys?
Miller, I'm glad to have you back. I'm hoping all y'all's technical issues are all fixed and we have a nice, clean recording here today.
Yeah, it should be good. It should be good today.
We don't have any of your annoying roommates trying to get involved. God.
Let's hope he doesn't hear it.
Oh, no, if he hears it, we'll just...
I didn't say it.
That was I will take the blame for that. So, other than WrestleMania this week, there's not really that much in the news that I can really think of. I mean, I know that AEW kind of did the recording this week. I mean, from what I heard, they have like months of matches and stuff recorded. So, if this whole pandemic does get worse, they're prepared to go. But other than that, I can't really think of any more news. Lance Archer made his debut this past Wednesday on AEW, but yeah, that's about it. Can y'all think of anything?
No.
Nothing really. Not anything big.
Yeah. We'll go over the entire WrestleMania card at the end of the show. We'll go through, we'll have all of our predictions. So
maybe unless you want to add in the news column, who will be replacing Roman Reigns?
I mean, we kind of covered that last week.
Yeah, we'll get to that in SmackDown, too.
I mean, the one thing I would say is Triple H did say that we're going to have there'll be a unique way that Roman Reigns will be out of WrestleMania. And then SmackDown, that just happened a few hours ago. That wasn't really a unique way that they kind of just announced that Strowman was taking over. So, kind of disappointed in that. I was hoping for, like, a storyline-wise. That means you could potentially have Braun versus Roman down the line again.
I mean, maybe there was something else, but, you know, everything's taped. So.
Yeah, so it's kind of hard to do. So, but, yeah, I mean, we're just excited that WrestleMania is right around the corner. First ever two-day WrestleMania. Don't think it's going to be as good as a two-day Wrestle Kingdom, but that being said, it should be very interesting, to say the least.
I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah.
I think it's WrestleMania, so we got some really big matches on paper.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, how is it going to be without the crowd and an empty performance center? It's just going to be interesting. I'm excited, but it's just strange. It's a strange feeling to have.
That's why I think the matches like the John Cena versus the Fiend and the Firefly Funhouse match, whatever that's going to be, as well as the Boneyard match between Undertaker and AJ Styles, should be interesting because they're not going to need to have fans for a match like this. I'm hoping that the Fiend versus John Cena is going to be anything like the House of Horrors match back in, I think, like 2017 between him and Randy. Like, it was so bad, it was entertaining. That's what I'm hoping to see from some of these matches. It's just the entertainment value.
Orton and Edge's last man standing match, they're probably going to go everywhere in that center anyway.
Yeah, it should be really, really fun time.
And then you look on the other side of that statement, though, Wash, you have matches that would really benefit from a crowd being there. Like, especially
McIntyre.
Especially if McIntyre gets the title. Mm-hmm. Fans are behind him heavily right now.
Yeah,
and we saw that, I think it was the last straw they did publicly when he, was that the one where he Claymore kicked Brock all over the stage and fans were crazy for him? It was one of the last ones before this all kind of kicked into high gear.
McIntyre has been a heel ever since him going to the main roster, but like right before right before Royal Rumble started, the crowd was getting behind him because he would do like a 1, 2, 3, and then Claymore kick a jobber. He did that to No Way Jose. He did that to Matt Hardy, which... I won't say he's a jobber, but he was kind of used as a jobbing situation.
He was booked week on WWE.
Yes, absolutely. For the past month. But that was the way that the fans started really liking McIntyre and hoping that he would win. And it was rumored for the longest time that it was either going to be Roman or McIntyre. And everyone thought, oh, Roman's going to do it. But no, they actually listened to the fans and like, okay, McIntyre, which is good. And the fans liked it, but now his big crowning achievement could potentially be in front of no fans. So what?
See, there's also that, and then there's also another big match is the Otis Ziggler match.
I wouldn't say that it's much of a big match. It's just the match that has the most amount of storyline potential that it's been for the past few.
Fans would be heavily behind
Otis. Oh, yeah.
We saw that at Elimination Chamber.
Even before that,
yeah.
That gauntlet match on SmackDown before that.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
He was super over.
Now,
for sure.
I've been thinking is, do you think they're going to wait for Drew McIntyre to win in front of fans, or do you think they're just going to give him the title now?
We'll get into this in the predictions,
yeah.
But
I'm not sure.
Either way. I'm not that. That's, I would have to that's think. A hard one to predict because WWE, that one could be a curveball. We've seen them do that before. I mean, think about, was it 2 years ago when it was Roman and Brock, and we're like, yeah, Roman's definitely pulling that title off them, regardless it was in front of fans. But it would just make more sense in this instance to keep it on Brock. So maybe SummerSlam, if that happens, if this is all kind of cleared up by then, hopefully, then we could have it in front of fans. Because I feel like they're pushing a lot of big matches till then. And we could talk about that in predictions as well. Because there's other ones that could be setting up for potential big matches at SummerSlam.
Yeah. Well, the only way for us to get to our predictions is to get through our recap. So we're going to start off with Raw. It was March 30th. 2020. It starts off with The Undertaker. And now The Undertaker is not his normal Undertaker. He's more of the Undertaker of old, the American Badass. So he opens Raw with a promo directed at AJ Styles ahead of their Boneyard match at WrestleMania. The Undertaker says Styles' mouth has written checks his ass can't cash. And that Styles' pipe bombs in recent interviews were only designed to get under The Undertaker's skin. Undertaker then accused Styles of hiding in other promotions until many of the WWE greats were gone. He said, like, Triple H, Ric Flair, Booker T, even though those two he... Oh, no, and Mick Foley, even though I believe he's faced all three of those in TNA, if I'm not mistaken. And then Undertaker said that Styles stepped over the line, going from business to personal when he involved the name of his wife, Michelle McCool.
Her.
And you're going to pay the ultimate price for disrespecting her, my wife, Michelle McCool. And at the Boneyard match, he was going to get the Holy Trinity. So I don't know exactly what that's going to be. I've heard that it could be because it's taped and in a different location. We could see three different types of The Undertaker. The original Undertaker, maybe he has a beard that it's all like, it's a red beard like his when he debuted. And then you have the American Badass. And now you have the Undertaker of now. And somehow they all team up. Or, I've heard, could be Undertaker, Kane, and someone new to kind of pass the torch. The Undertaker's going to pass the torch and say, you are now the next one. I have no idea. Should be very interesting to see. I'm excited for this match, to say the least.
Yeah, I've been very curious. It seems like he's kind of flip-flopped from normal on Undertaker to maybe shifting into the American Badass, but we don't exactly know that for a fact because he's still claiming himself as kind of the normal old Undertaker, but he's showing up and looking and talking like the American Badass Undertaker, but I really don't know. We'll see. Just the bandana over his head, the beanie, the leather jacket, it seems very much like an Undertaker of 2003, but we shall see.
Yeah, that being said, I mean, anything is possible in the WWE. So after that, Becky Lynch cut a promo after her replay of her underwhelming WrestleMania 35 match in the main event with Ronda Rousey and Charlotte Flair. Boy, that wasn't great.
It was terrible.
Yeah, I wouldn't say terrible. It was just for the first ever women's match at WrestleMania and having a botched finish. It was disappointing. But Lynch says that she had no problem admitting she doesn't know her own identity without being the champion. But she knows that she's starting to get to Shayna Baszler's head after she attacked her last week. She says, I can see it now, the relief and exhilaration you'll get when you beat me, if you beat me, as if. For once, you'll steal Ronda Rousey's spotlight instead of the other way around. Before she could finish, Baszler snuck up behind her and locked Lynch in the Caravuta clutch, and then held up the title to end the segment. So, this is a feud that's been going on for a while. I'm excited to see it end. Finally.
Yeah, I'm hoping there's a couple matches on WrestleMania that we'll be glad to see come to a close.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is definitely one of them. I'm hoping Shayna Baszler looks like a monster and just destroys her. Because she should not run over...
At the same time... with Comparing the two, I feel like Charlotte and Ripley, I feel like that one's going to kind of, it's going to be done after that match, maybe. But I feel like Lynch and Baszler could carry on till another pay-per-view or SummerSlam or something, yeah, just because.
I feel like with the build in recent months for that match, it would be kind of ridiculous to have Baszler come in there and just pretty much, I don't want to say ruin the Women's Elimination Chamber match, but she went in there and she dominated all the other talent, including Asuka, who has been kind of heralded as one of like the stronger in the women's division, stronger women in the
not
women's
anymore.
Division.
She lost to Alexa Bliss clean last week.
Yeah, we can talk about that later too. But I think Becky's character really needs this now, because she's kind of gone from being like the man character to kind of wanting to prove herself that she's the best. She's going to prove it, to being kind of this like kind of like cocky, arrogant, like no one's going to touch me. None of these women can beat me. I've proven it time and time again. And now after Baszler's kind of come in here, it's kind of, I think she could knock her down kind of a peg, her character down a peg, and it'd be interesting again to see her character.
I could very well see this being a straight squat. I would compare it to, this is just maybe my prediction, that, you know, Baszler totally squashes Lynch, and it's kind of like the Lesnar Cena match
I was thinking
in 2014,
exact same thing.
And that it's going to be a total squash, and then that, you know, Lynch is knocked down a peg, like Miller said, and then it, you know, takes some storyline and build herself back up, and maybe SummerSlam. Heading into SummerSlam,
and then that's your main event. Yeah, absolutely. I could see that. I mean, I think that Baszler running through the entire Elimination Chamber, she looked like a monster there. She should not look like a monster here, though. I mean, she should look like a monster. There's no way they should not make her look like that. She needs to destroy her. I'm saying it can go 10 minutes. Becky can have some offense, but Shayna needs to just dominate most of the thing.
And it needs to be like Lesnar Cena SummerSlam of 2014. It needs to be just a long, drawn-out squash match.
Yep. I agree with that.
Or they could do a short one. You never know. Just a quick bell rings, and then, you know, she puts Becky to sleep.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, match-wise, I'm actually more anticipating of the Ripley-Charlotte match, like, wrestling-wise, than this one.
Yeah. Well, we can talk about that one when we get to it. Let's see what we got next, Wash.
We have a Aleister Black squash match.
Oh, speaking of squash matches.
He defeated Jason Cade via pinfall after a Black Mask kick, which doesn't really do anything for his Bobby Lashley match for some reason that's happening.
When did they announce Black versus Lashley? Was it last week?
Two weeks ago.
A week and a half ago, around that time. But yeah, it was just a Twitter post, them saying that happens, as well as the Andrade and Garza match. But for some reason, it's just whatever. It's a match.
I mean, I know there's almost no way that we can add in any storyline with it, because the Raws are taped and they can't really do anything about it. But at least, I don't know, add in some promos or something. At least give it a little bit of build, but we'll never know. I don't see this really being a very exciting match, even though I really like Aleister Black. I don't see this being a really good match at all.
Yeah.
It depends. If Aleister, it all comes down to Aleister. I feel like it comes down to Bobby, more or less. If Bobby comes in, because we know Aleister can put on a good match. Think about when he had like a bunch of great matches against Buddy Murphy, I think end of December, late January, early January, kind of that time frame. And we also got, like, I believe it was Rowan, right, after that, before Drew pretty much squashed him. And they had some good matches, and everyone was like, well, are we sure Rowan can carry a good singles match? And he did it with Aleister Black. So I think it'll be interesting to see, can Aleister pull Bobby Lashley through a good match? Because in my opinion, I mean, you may disagree, I feel as if Bobby Lashley has kind of been a little underwhelming since he's returned to WWE. He really hasn't had, like, a big match. I mean, last year at Mania, we had him and Balor and watched, look what happened there. Balor pretty much squashed him because it was the demon. So, I mean, we'll see if Aleister and him can have a good match. It could be a kind of a sleeper match, but I don't want to say it's necessarily going to be like a bad match yet until we see it.
Didn't Lashley and Ricochet have a pretty good match on a Raw like a month ago or 2 months
so.
Ago?
I think so.
And Seth Rollins was also in that match. It was for the number one contendership.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was sort of Super Showdown. And then they also had a singles match the week after. But we're getting off track here. Remember, we can do all this stuff when we get to WrestleMania. We got to get through this recap. I mean, this Raw felt like it was 4 hours.
3 hours.
No, it felt longer because we had to. Whenever you had to sit through
the whole 35 women's match again.
Yeah, exactly. And I believe there was another match out there.
And Brock Mysterio.
Oh yeah, that was a weird match. But after Aleister squashes, then we have Kevin Owens and the Street Profits against Seth Rollins, Angel Garza, and Andrade. But Andrade was unable to compete, and he's not cleared to compete for WrestleMania. So Zelina Vega introduced the 22-year-old Austin Theory from NXT as his replacement. And they had a solid match. Theory got to show off some of his spots throughout the match, like his high-flying. But this is all about building to the WrestleMania match between the tag teams, and more importantly, the Mania showdown between Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens. There was one spot where Montez Ford was running the ropes. Seth Rollins forgot to trip him, and he went for a jump. Austin Theory was not ready to catch him, and he fell right on the steel, and it looked pretty bad.
That was a scary spot. That looked bad.
Yeah.
Really bad.
But then the ending was Owens failed to repeatedly get into the ring with Rollins, eventually setting up to get the stunner on Garza and get the win. But right when he did it, in comes Seth Rollins, hits him with the curb stomp. We go to commercial break. Fine match. Austin Theory looked good, but then I was very concerned about Montez Ford after that jump. But I don't know what happened on Mania. I ain't got a clue, but I think that match still went on, so I'm guessing he was fine. So that's good. So Owens cut a promo and said that Rollins kicked some sense into him, and Owens addressed Rollins' claim that the Performance Center was built on his work. Owens said the Performance Center was built in spite of Rollins, not because of him, saying he had heard from everyone that Rollins was a nightmare to deal with when he was at FCW, which was pretty much NXT before NXT was NXT. And while Rollins has more WrestleMania moments in his career than Owens, he did none of them without backup or by using underhanded means to get what he wants. Well,
he's not wrong.
He's not wrong, yeah. But
you got a Money in the Bank cash in, you got Triple H handing you a title. But face Rollins won a lot of titles.
Yeah, I mean, his IC title win wasn't because of underhanded means. Sure, his Universal one at 35 was because he did a low blow. So I can see what he means. So yeah, that's fine. That's fine. This Saturday night, he says. So I'm guessing this match on Saturday night. There you go. I will show you that you're not a prophet. You're not a messiah. You're not a god. When I take my first WrestleMania moment from you. Because the only other WrestleMania moment he had was beating Jericho at 33. Hasn't really done much at Mania. To say the least. Then we get a backstage promo, and these promos were very well done because there was no fans to interrupt him. They were just Edge talking to a camera, Kevin Owens talking to a camera, Becky Lynch talking to a camera, Undertaker talking to a camera, which is what it needs to be. But here we have Edge. He admits he's a junkie for wrestling, responding to Randy Orton's accusation last week that Adam Copeland is a junkie for Edge. The returning superstar agreed that he's far from the only one who acts about competing in WWE. Edge went back to telling Orton that he has no idea what grit actually means, noting that Orton coasted when he was hand chosen for Evolution and only had spurts of greatness during his career. He then provided his definition of grit: never being anyone's lackey, putting together a Hall of Fame career off his own back, being forced to retire and still finding a way to back. He then went on and say that he has passion, and the only time Orton shows the same is when Edge is around. Mentioning the names of his kids was a mistake. Edge said that as was accepting as a last man standing match against a man who's willing to do anything to win. This time, I'm not going to pull you out. I'm going to push you so far in that you'll never get out. Jeesh. Edge is one of the greats, to say the least. Not only in the ring, but with the microphone, too. So I'm glad he's back. Even if it's just going to be 3 matches a year, 2 to 3 matches, it's special. It's special to see him.
Yeah, coming from someone we never thought was going to be able to wrestle again.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, 9 years later, he's back when no one ever thought he would come back because his injury was that bad. Injury was that bad.
So did you... Okay, so I know this is kind of be getting off track just a little bit, but it shouldn't... I'm asking... Do you compare this to Daniel Bryan, or do you think Daniel Bryan's coming in retrospect? Do you think Daniel Bryan, when people thought he was going to be able to wrestle again, you think he was going to come back before Edge did?
Honestly, when I remember him being on Talking Smack, his contract was coming up, and the reason that he wasn't going to wrestle, he wanted to wrestle so bad, and the reason WWE doctors would not clear him, they would not think it's safe. He wanted to wrestle, and he even said publicly, if they do not clear me to wrestle, I'm going to go to the Indy Halls. I'm going to go to Ring of Honor back. I'm going to go back to Ring of Honor to go to New Japan because he wanted to wrestle that bad. So I had a feeling he was going to wrestle. I just didn't think it was going to be in WWE. Edge, on the other hand, I never thought he was going to come back. So I think it's kind of a different situation.
I think both injuries were bad, but I think Edge's was just... what was it? Triple fusion neck surgery?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
what it was.
That's bad. Like one minuscule little bad bump could ruin him.
Mm-hmm.
And I never actually thought that he was going to come back until the little rumors started swirling before the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, I think I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I mean, I think he's good to go, and if he wants to go, that's good for him. But at the same time, I'm not gonna worry about Daniel Bryan. Like, I just kind of worry about Edge in the back of my head, because I feel like it at any moment, like I said, a bad bump could be the end of him. But I think he'll be okay.
Yeah, I think the whole thing with Edge is after we saw him deliver that spear, I think it was to Elias at SummerSlam last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone was like, he can hit a spear. Like, he can be in the ring again. Like, everyone had this optimism that he could be in the ring again, and the reports are coming out that he was looking good. And from rumors I heard, Wash, I'm not sure if it's 100% true, but rumors I was reading up on and was hearing was that he was doing the same thing Daniel Bryan was doing, that he wanted to wrestle. And if WWE doctors never cleared him to wrestle, he was going to go somewhere else to at least get, like, a couple final matches in.
To get some money, too, I mean.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
He, like, I wouldn't say he's all about money, but, I mean.
AEW did offer him, did they not?
I believe they offered him
the same amount of money, but they want him to work more dates, and it wasn't going to be as long. So, yeah. But right after that really good promo, Asuka had a squash match between a NXT superstar, Caden Carter, who was in the gauntlet match this past NXT. We'll get to that one right after this. She submitted her via the Asuka lock. So just to build up her and Kari versus Alexa and Nikki. Then we had the Rey Mysterio-Brock Lesnar match from Survivor Series. Fun match. Somehow it was like a 10-minute match, even though they still got 2 commercial breaks out of it. I'm like, golly, they're really pushing for time.
Yep.
Then Paul Heyman cut a promo with Brock Lesnar by his side to close the show. Heyman addressed the duo status in the Go Home segment of the Go Home show before WrestleMania, saying it's a spot that only goes to the champion. Heyman touted Drew McIntyre as a special athlete who has stepped to the challenge in front of him. Heyman then named the other special athletes who Lesnar has handled in his WWE and MMA career, naming The Rock, Hulk Hogan, John Cena, and a host of other MMA guys. I believe he said, whoever he defeated. I couldn't tell you who he defeated in MMA. It wasn't that many. Next year on the Go Home show or on the Go Home Raw before WrestleMania, do you know who's going to be standing here with a title over his shoulder? Heyman asked before answering his own question. Brock Lesnar, pretty much guaranteeing that at the same time next year, Brock Lesnar is still going to be champion. And even though I think Drew McIntyre is going to win, there's a good possibility that Brock Lesnar is going to win it back someday. Either that or win the Universal title. That's just the way that, that's how much they love Brock Lesnar.
Brock Lesnar will be holding a title by next year, guaranteed.
Oh, probably so. Money on it. Probably so.
I don't know which one it'll be. I believe he will get it at the end of the year. I won't say, maybe SummerSlam. I wouldn't say that early. I'd say Survivor Series or Royal Rumble. And I believe he'll have it going to Mania next year. They love him.
There's a good chance of that.
Vince loves him.
There's a good chance. So then we switch over to the 1st of April 2020 to WWE NXT. It opens up on the USA Network with a video package to hype up the North American champion Keith Lee ahead of his triple threat match with Dominik Dijakovic and Damian Priest. Tom Phillips is one of the announcers and Sam Roberts. So I watched AEW first, and then the next day I watched NXT. And I looked on Twitter that Sam Roberts was trending. I was like, oh, is he on the thing? And people hated him. I'm like, he can't be that bad. Oh, he was bad. Oh, he was really bad.
Yep. People were complaining heavily. They were talking about going from having Triple H to having Sam Roberts.
Like, from Mauro to Triple H to Sam Roberts. Oh, that's horrible. That's horrible. And he just wasn't good. He wasn't very good. So I'm hoping that they learned from this, and hopefully he was not on WrestleMania as one of the announcers. Because right now, the only announcers that have been on the shows have been like Tom Phillips, Byron Saxton, and Michael Cole, and now Sam Roberts. That's it over these past few weeks. I'm worried. I'm worried because I don't know if I can handle 4 hours of Sam Roberts. We'll see, though. Maybe.
Are they having a pre-show?
Yeah, they're having a one-hour pre-show on both days.
Because usually, if I remember correctly, last year he was just in the pre-show, and I'm hoping it stays that way.
He's on most pre-shows. He's on NXT pre-shows and most of the WWE ones. But the first match on NXT was Bobby Fish versus Velveteen Dream. So, Dream makes his way to the ring, does his normal stuff, even though there's no fans there. So, I mean, it's kind of dumb. There's a lot of trash talking as Velveteen Dream and Fish sized each other up and traded basic holds and takedowns. Dream was the first one to turn up the heat with a series of strikes. Fish then avoided the Purple Rainmaker by rolling out of the ring. He took control as the show cut to its first commercial break and dominated the match until the second break. Fish then tried an ankle lock and a sleeper hold, but his opponent would not go down without a fight. Dream turned the tables and hit the Dream Valley Driver for the win out of nowhere. He gave a quick promo when it was over. After the match, Dream music hits as Tom says he is now one step closer to a title shot from the NXT champion Adam Cole, who suggested this match. Dream has his arm raised as he stands tall and we go to replays. Dream takes the mic and addresses Adam Cole, telling him to put his video games down because this is actually real. Dream goes on and says the experience is coming for Dream. I mean, the experience is coming for Cole. Dream tells Cole to play hard but he's about to get worked harder than ever before, courtesy of Velveteen. Dream snaps his fingers and his music starts back up. This match is not official yet. Don't know when it's happening. Don't know if it's been filmed or not. They can't do it in Florida anymore because that's too many people. I'm not hyped about this. I'm really not hyped about this.
I mean, we were never really hyped about it, though. We talked about this a month ago, 2 months ago, when they had the whole steel. I think it was a month ago. The steel cage match on NXT when the weird segment where Velveteen locked him in the cage, and we're like, Velveteen just came back and they're gonna give him a title shot against Adam Cole, like,
sure, why not? He's been champion for almost a year. Maybe he'll lose it. I don't know yet.
Yeah, isn't he the longest reigning? Didn't now, he just get that, like,
yeah, he passed it like 2 weeks ago or a week ago. But after that, Mackenzie Mitchell interviews Malcolm Bevins after him and his associates attacked Matt Riddle last week. Bivens asked what the message he was sending for Riddle, Dunn, and the fans. Bivens talks about he's a business manager. He's been looking around the world for the biggest and baddest tag team, and he's found them, Rinku and Suvarve, something like that. He puts them over some more and says together they are force, but all three they're family. Bivens Enterprises. So I guess they're the tag team future. We'll see. Right now, Matt Riddle's by himself because Pete Dunne is stuck in the UK. So, not going to see that match for probably another 2 months. Right after this, we have Dexter Lumis versus Jake Atlas. Both are kind of making their TV debuts. Lumis made his debut like 3 months ago, but he's kind of repackaged now. And Jake Atlas just signed with the WWE like a month ago. So they're both kind of new. Lumis stares Atlas down, not blinking. Atlas charges, but Dexter sidesteps him and unloads with strikes into the corner. Dexter beats Atlas around and blocks him, then nailing a big spinebuster in the middle of the ring. Lumis with big shots to the face now. Then Dexter picks Atlas up and rocks him with a big right hand to put him right back down. Atlas finally drops Lumis as he looks to mount some offense. Lumis then gets him hung up on the middle rope. Lumis runs the rope, slides to the floor, and rocks Atlas again. Lumis comes back for a close two count in the middle of the ring. Lumis grounds Atlas, now digging to the face and the eye socket. We get a big leaping neck breaker as Lumis goes to the floor. Atlas runs, leaps out, nailing Lumis, but Atlas with more offense. But then Dexter finally shuts him down in the middle of the ring with a side slam. Lumis goes right back into the choke submission for the win. So Jake Atlas, who's new, loses in his TV debut. So I was disappointed that this is a guy who's very talented, made his name in PWG and Evolve, and I just don't like seeing him lose. But it's he'll get a repackage because he's not really much of a character right now. He's just new. So, fine little squash match. And then we have the second chance gauntlet match between Shotzi Blackheart, Deonna Purrosa, Xia Li, Dakota Kai, Aaliyah, and Caden Carter. This was Shotzi Blackheart's pretty much coming out party. She first defeated Deonna Purrosa, then Xia Li, then Aaliyah, then Caden Carter, and then finally it was Dakota Kai in the finals. And going into this match, I mean, I thought Dakota Kai was going to win because her blood rival Tegan Nox is already in the ladder match, so I'm guessing they're going to continue that. And obviously, with the Dakota kick, Dakota Kai defeated Blackheart to advance to the number one contender ladder match next week. Fine. It took a little longer than I wanted to. It was like a good 30 minutes. But hey, it was a fine little match. Right after that, we had Joaquin Wilde and Kushida. And they had a nice little match. I believe they had one like 2 weeks ago. Back and forth. It was just really fast action. They put probably 10 minutes of moves into a 5-minute match. And Kushida won with a armbar. It was fine. Right after that, Joaquin Wilde was in a back parking lot. Wilde expressed frustration after losing once again. He thought things would be different when he came to NXT. But then an SUV comes speeding up, almost hitting Wilde and Mitchell. Two masked men in Lucha masks gets out and abduct Wilde, putting him into the SUV. The truck speeds off. This appears to be the same men who took out Raul Mendoza a few weeks ago. So, is this kind of like their Dark Order? I hope not. I hope not. Unless it's going to be like a debuting superstar as the leader. Maybe, I mean, I'm trying to think who's signed there now. There's not really that many at the Performance Center. So, okay, sure, why not? Hey, for all we know, these Lucha guys could be the Lucha House Party. They're turning heel.
Gosh, possibly.
That wouldn't be very good. The main event of the night featuring the match we probably would have seen at the NXT TakeOver. Keith Lee defending his North American title against Damian Priest and Dominik Dijakovic in a matchup of powerhouses. This was just as physical as you would expect. There were big slams, stiff strikes, and surprising high-flying spots from all three superstars. At one point, Lee used Priest's body as a weapon to beat down Dominik Dijakovic before he powerbombed Priest for a very close two count. It was pretty funny. I mean, he was using it as a friggin' battering ram. I felt like it kind of hurt all three men doing that. But then Priest was able to get a nightstick from underneath the ring. It was a triple threat, so no disqualification. But Lee propelled him out of the ring and took advantage of the situation by using... what is his finisher called?
Spirit Bomb?
It's not the Spirit Bomb. It's his other one. It's kind of like... looks like a... AA into a jackhammer. I forgot exactly what he called it, but he pinned Dominik Dijakovic with that move. It was fine. A lot of the times there was all three wrestlers were down in the ring, just laying there, which if there was fans, you would hear the fans say, "This is awesome." No fans, so it kind of just was quiet and awkward. But hey, It was a fun match. It was a fun match, to say the least.
Hey, Wash, can I ask you a question?
Yes, go right ahead.
How many, could you count on both your hands how many times we've seen a match involving Keith Lee and Dominik Dijakovic?
I mean, I would have to count with my hands and my toes. I mean, it's been quite a few. Because I would see on YouTube so many matches between Keith Lee and Dominik Dijakovic in Evolve. And then in NXT alone, we've probably seen 7, if not 8, maybe 9. We've seen it way too many times. So I'm hoping this is the end. It's probably not, though. I'd much rather see Keith Lee versus Kushida. Or Keith Lee versus Leo Rush. It'd be interesting.
The big dude versus small dude.
I feel like they had a match in PWG, if I'm not wrong.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah, but we've seen it quite a bit. I'm hoping this is the end. I'm hoping Vince likes Dominik Dijakovic, that maybe he'll put him into the main roster and use him. Kind of like at what they're doing with Eric Rowan. Probably not, though.
We'll see both of them get called up, and we'll see Dijakovic and Keith Lee have a rivalry on the main roster.
It's just like Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. Their rivalry will never end.
I don't know. I think it was a good match from what I saw of it. I still hold, though, their best match, I think, was at the last TakeOver.
Yeah.
I love that the opening match they had, the Lee and Dijakovic match. It was great.
It was great. I love it. But the one that I think their first ever, no, maybe first or second ever match they had at PWG, earned 5 stars, and that one put the one at TakeOver to shame. I'm just going to say that.
Oh, for sure, but I mean.
But in NXT-wise, the one at TakeOver, yes, was the absolute best. That was NXT. It was good. Not as good as last week's NXT, but it was still, it was better than Raw. And that's not hard to do.
No, it's not.
Then we switch over to the same night, AEW, April 1st, 2020. The show kicks off with Cody and Tony announcing the rest of the TNT Championship Tournament. And that was, so on Dark the night before, they announced it's going to be Cody versus Sean Spears will face the winner of Sammy Guevara and Darby Allin. Now on the other half, it's going to be Kip Sabian versus Dustin Rhodes, and then Lance Archer versus Colt Cabana. So, looking at that, I'm guessing Lance Archer and Cody are on a collision course right now. Because you've had this whole major feud between Jake and Cody, so I'm guessing that's got to be the collision course match at Double or Nothing, if Double or Nothing even happens. We'll see, though.
If you want to do quick predictions for that, I can do this really quick. I think Darby's getting in.
Yep.
Darby's probably going to beat Sammy. Unless they want to pull the upset with Sammy, I don't know, because Darby and Sammy have both been great.
Yeah.
For AEW. Really good. I'll be fine
with either or, honestly. I'd be fine with either or.
But I feel like after the end of the match this week, which we'll get to, I feel like they're definitely heading for another Darby and Cody match. Darby-Cody 3.
Oh, yeah.
And those are always great matches. So I feel like they're going to build for that, and that means Cody's definitely winning his first match. Then on the other side of the bracket, I believe Kip Sabian's beating Dustin Rhodes. Just kind of, they're going to put over the younger talent there.
Potentially.
And they've been kind of building Kip Sabian. He's kind of like in the middle. Like, they'll throw him against an opponent we know he can't beat, like a member of the Elite or even sometime. So we know like he's not going to win. But then again, they'll put him against some jobbers and he'll look really good, or like some lower card talent and he'll look really good. So I feel like they're going to put him over Dustin there. And maybe we'll see some interference from the Dark Order. We don't know, because they kind of had some kind of stare down thing. We'll get to it. I don't know if it meant anything, but I guess we'll find out as weeks go on. And then probably one of the harder ones, but I feel like it's kind of easy at the same time, is Lance Archer and Colt Cabana.
Oh, this isn't hard.
But they're both newer, like new talents. But we know. I know hardcore fans, but maybe just regular fans might know this too. We know that Colt Cabana kind of came in to just kind of take a... He's going to wrestle, but he's just kind of there to be like a backstage guy. Because he's been doing this for a long time. We know that.
I mean, so is Lance Archer. Lance Archer
has too, but the way they're building Lance Archer up is more of to be like a big heel threat. Kind of like a monster.
I think definite monster.
Definite monster. So I feel like he's going to beat him there. And I don't know, because I want to see Cody and Lance Archer in this match. but I feel like if this is a mid-card title or like a secondary
title... It's not... Okay, well, it's not a mid-card title because there's been many interviews that they don't like the word mid-card. They want this title to be just as important as the other title. This is just going to be their TV one that's going to be defended more and more on TV rather than on just on the pay-per-views. So, but you have to have someone big be the first champion, whether that be Cody or Lance Archer. You want something big, like...
I agree, but
you can't have a guy like Kip Sabian.
Exactly. I think this is exactly what we've been waiting for Darby Allin.
As much as that might happen, I don't see how they don't book Cody versus Lance Archer. It just makes the most sense right now.
Yeah.
And then you have Lance Archer be the first champion.
And the championship match is on Dynamite, right?
No, it's going to be a Double or Nothing.
Okay, yeah, then it might definitely be...
Exactly. There you go. There you go.
Okay, so for that bracket, I agree with everything you said, but I don't see Kip Sabian beating Dustin. I feel like it's going to be... what's that side of the bracket? So if Dustin
beats Kip Sabian, he'll face Lance Archer and Colt Cabana.
Oh, yeah. I feel Dustin versus Archer is going to...
It makes sense.
I feel that makes sense
because Dustin is his brother and all this is Cody's brother, and that's
another
way.
And he's gonna hurt him, that's gonna hype up that little story that I got going on right there.
But we won't know how good Lance Archer was until we get to his match with Marcus Stunt later in this. But to get there, we have to go through the first match, which was Trent Barretta, or just Trent, versus Kenny Omega. Trent starts off and scores first, delivering a big moonsault that wiped out Kenny Omega on the floor. The tag team champion answered with a tope that left him clutching his own shoulder in pain, but also earned him the early advantage. His mean streak was touted by Cody on commentary, pretty much praising it. Omega then delivered a targeted backbreaker and followed with a second. His injured limb, including a surgically repaired left hand, left him prone to a comeback by Trent, who seized the control of the bout. The fight spilled up the ramp and into the staging area, where Omega recovered to send Trent into the guardrail despite warnings from referee Aubrey Edwards. He delivered a wicked powerbomb into the set, and the fight returned into the square circle. Trent delivered a baseball slide German suplex that downed Omega, heading into the first break of the night. Back from the break, with 3 minutes remaining, Omega followed up a snapdragon suplex with a V-trigger. Trent then recovered and delivered a German suplex from the top rope that appeared to knock Omega loopy. But then Omega was able to recover, deliver another V-trigger before hitting the one-wing angel for the pinfall victory. This went around 19 minutes, 10 seconds, and it was fast action. This would have been one of the best matches in AEW history. Or AWTNT history on Dynamite, if there was fans. Because having the fans say this was awesome, the reaction for a lot of the flips and stuff would have been perfect. Still a very good match. Right after this, the highest ranked woman in AEW rankings and the top contender to the women's title, Hikaru Shida, battled a Georgia native, Anna Jay, in singles competition. Hikaru Shida pummeled her opponent, fighting her to the floor, where she came face-to-face with Britt Baker. The dentist demanded 6 feet of separation, and the fight returned to the square circle. The competitors exchanged a series of strikes before Shida absolutely blasted her opponent. Anna Jay recovered and delivered a flipping netbreaker for a near fall. She followed with a backslide, but Shida escaped it too. Shida responded with a suplex and put away her opponent with a falcon arrow for the win.
Anna Jay wasn't too bad.
No, she wasn't. She was not very bad. I mean, this was filmed in Norcross, Georgia, so right up the road from Atlanta, or right down the road. Not mistaken.
I feel like I don't think AEW doesn't quite, I won't say that they don't do squash matches, but they don't, what's the word I'm looking for, they don't like to see, they don't like to see an opponent necessarily squashed, like unless we knew he was,
they'll get some offense in.
Unless your name is John Moxley versus Michael Nakazawa, because that went 10 seconds. Or John Moxley versus Alex Reynolds, because again, that went 10 seconds. But that was when they were trying to build up John Moxley, so I'm okay with a match like that. But with this,
you know, whenever we see their AEWs, I'm not going to say their local talent, like we call it with WWE, because I'm sure that they got that these people we're seeing have futures in the company. We're just not.
There's a good chance
it's going to be a little bit.
There's a good chance that this Anna Jay has been training at the Nightmare Factory, which is where Cody and everyone else, they train future potential wrestlers. I want to say it was back in like November of last year. They signed a boxer from the UK, and he's been trained there for the next 5 months. If this was WWE, he would already be out there in NXT right now. But they're seeing, hey, this guy's not ready. Let's continue to train him for another 5 months until he's ready to go out there. He's a tall dude, he's like 6'4", and become a potential monster for us. That's what I think they could be doing with Anna Jay here, but they're running out of people because only a certain amount of people can actually travel to this certain place. John Moxley, he's in Las Vegas. The Young Bucks, they're in California. Excalibur's in his house, at his home in California. Taz is in New York. The Prime Powerful's in New York.
JR's in Oklahoma.
Yeah, he's in Oklahoma, right? I mean, and so they're using the as much as they can. And this was a fine match that wasn't bad, but it was never going to be a 10-minute banger of a match. Right after that, a video package aired hyping up John Moxley versus Jake Hager for the AEW Championship in 2 weeks. Of note, Moxley claiming the target on his back pissed him off. Sammy Guevara claiming the Inner Circle will support Hager if he wants to be champion because they are a family. And Chris Jericho saying he will hold off on his obligated rematch in hopes Hager beats Moxley and put him in his place. So this will be a no disqualification match in 2 weeks. This match was filmed at Daly's place like 2 weeks ago, maybe a week and a half ago. So from what I heard, it's very good. Jim Ross was hyping it up on a Wrestling Observer interview. So I'm really excited for it. Then we get Lance Archer versus Marco Stunt. I like this match.
It was fun. It was very entertaining.
It's a great botch match. I hate to use that word for it, but call it like you see it.
It was just Lance Archer just ragdolling the much smaller Marco Stunt. He beat him with big power moves like suplexes, the choke slam, and then he finishes him off with an Irish curse power slam. And it was a murder. It was a straight up
murder. And then he literally threw him like a football
into the wrestlers on the
into the gun club, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, because on this episode, like last week, they didn't have any wrestlers at ringside hype up the match. This week, they had the gun club. The Best Friends was out there. Britt Baker, Jimmy Havoc, Penelope Ford, and Kip Sabian. So I was like, okay, I like. That's what needed to happen, and him throwing Marco Stunt a good 10 feet away, it seemed like it makes him look like a monster. And his theme was pretty cool, too.
Yes, he did. Oh, I like this theme.
Yeah. After that, we had Dark Order members 8 and 9. They battled the debuting Natural Nightmares, which is Dustin Rhodes and QT Marshall, managed by Brandi Rhodes. The babyfaces worked over one of the masked competitors, while Tony Schiavone and Colt Cabana expressed confusion over which Dark Order member was which. Quick tags and double team maneuvers dominated the action on part of the Natural Nightmares. The heels momentarily beat up on Marshall, but a flapjack allowed him to create some separation and tag Dustin Rhodes in. The veteran competitors continued to cut a frantic pace, and moments later they put away the Dark Order for the win. Disappointed with his team's performance, the Exalted One Brody Lee hit the ring and powerbombed the masked man who lost the fall. So it seems like if you lose a fall, you are like, if you lose, you're out of the group. So kind of what the Nexus did back in the day. If you got injured, you're out of the Nexus. This is pretty interesting. And then I think right before this match, it was Brody Lee backstage and they're like watching a video, something like that. And one guy was yawning and he pretty much kicked him out because he was yawning. I'm guessing it's another Vince McMahon. Like kind of thing,
just
that
just like the thing last week with the dinner scene, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, so it just makes Brody Lee look like a complete like maniac who just cares about everything powerful. Then after that, we joined Chris Jericho in his home as he was relaxing in a pool. He had a message for the Elite, calling them a group of fools. He went on to call out Kenny Omega. We then saw Vanguard 1 flying in to confront Chris Jericho. Jericho got out of the pool wearing pants for some reason. He wasn't wearing like a swimsuit. He was just wearing like normal pants. He then offered Vanguard 1 a place in the Inner Circle once again, and he gave it a small Inner Circle t-shirt. Then Vanguard started to leave, so Jericho released the hounds on him. His five little small dogs, maybe I think there was probably one big dog, but they were all just small little yip dogs. And they started chasing the drone until the drone just left. So very, very funny segment, seeing all these like little small dogs. Yeah, seeing all the dogs just go and try to chase it was pretty humorous. Pretty humorous.
This is why I love Chris Jericho.
Absolutely.
He can cut a great promo on an inanimate object.
Like, a lot of guys in WWE could not make this segment work, but Chris Jericho is one of the guys that can make this segment work.
Yeah, it was really good. I really enjoyed that segment. What he's done this week and last week with Vanguard 1 has been very, very funny.
Absolutely.
Very entertaining.
The main event of the evening saw the four competitors in the first two quarterfinal matches of the tournament battle in tag team action as Cody and Darby Allin took on Sean Spears and Sammy Guevara. The babyface tandem were rolling when we head into our first break, delivering double tope cone hellos to the opposition. After the commercial timeout, though, the heels seized control by working over the smaller Darby. A hot tag to Cody sparked a brief comeback, but Spears dumped the executive vice president of AEW into the stands, where Kip Sabian and Jimmy Havoc attacked him with an Allen wrench, and Britt Baker was hitting him with her shoe, with like her the back of her what was a heel.
Like heel, yeah.
Yeah. Back into the ring, Cody exchanged rights and lefts with Spears, looking to create some separation and make the tag. He got his chance and finally made the tag to Darby Allin, the face-painted enigma of AEW, who exploded into the match and pummeled the opposition. As the fight spilled to the floor, Darby climbed a nearby pole some 10 feet in the air, launched himself off with a coffin drop to Sammy Guevara and Spears. Spears recovered and delivered a frog splash to Cody. He demanded a chair from Sammy, who provided one, when Allie was rolled in to make the save. Spears rolled him up for the win, so like Sammy was grabbing the chair away from... No, Darby was grabbing the chair away from Sammy when Sean Spears just rolled up Darby. And I guess the heels won. Kind of make them look good when more than likely both of them are going to lose next week to these two. After the match, a frustrated Darby Allin decked Cody as the show faded to black. Very, very good show. I thought that this show was better than last week's. Darby and Cody should have another really good match. Hopefully it will be longer than 20 minutes.
Cause... Well, we got to get through Sean Spears and Cody first, Wash.
Yeah, I mean...
Guevara and Darby.
I mean, I'm excited for Sammy Guevara and Darby. Sean Spears and Cody, not so much.
Come on, it's Sean Spears.
I think absolutely. I didn't enjoy that match as much as a lot of people did All Out last year.
No, I wasn't the biggest fan. The one thing that saved the match for me was Arn Anderson. That's about it.
Oh, I agree.
But now we switch over to SmackDown on the 3rd of April, 2020. SmackDown kicks off with Miz TV, featuring Miz, Morrison, The Usos, and The New Day. The Usos come out before the host, saying they cannot wait to win the titles this weekend. Then out come The New Day. The New Day question the Usos, saying, y'all are not going to win the titles, we're going to win the titles. Both teams start arguing until Miz and Morrison come out. Miz says they have already beat both of these teams at Elimination Chamber, so why not beat them again at WrestleMania in a ladder match? Miz and Morrison climb the ladders on the stage to make a point, saying they will climb these ladders to retain the titles at WrestleMania. The Usos and The New Day start running to the stage to take them out. They start trying to climb down. The big brawl with all the wrestlers, there's like super kicks to The New Day. Then Big E starts getting mad at The Usos for super kicking Kofi. And somehow Miz and Morrison stand tall to end the segment. So that's a ladder match. From what I heard, Miz was sick, so he did not actually wrestle. It's going to be, I think, John Morrison versus Kofi versus one of the Usos. Not like it really matters that much at WrestleMania. So I don't know if it's going to be a ladder match or just a triple threat match. We'll find out.
Have you seen the diss track that Miz and Morrison came out?
That's a very...
I thought it was entertaining.
Yeah, it's very entertaining.
It's something they can only pull off.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. They announced that the Ric Flair retirement match will be shown tonight. Then we have a triple threat match between Naomi, Lacey Evans, and Tamina. Sasha and Bayley are in commentary. Both of the faces are trying to take out the bigger Tamina. Tamina is able to take control, though, and knock both women off the apron when we head to our first break. When we get back, Tamina is still in control with the faces trying to get back into it. Lacey was able to ground Tamina, but when she was going for a pin, Naomi pulls her out of the ring. Then in comes Sasha to take out Lacey on the outside. Tamina hits Naomi with a Samoan drop, but Naomi kicks out. Thanks to a distraction from Bayley, Tamina hits a super kick on Naomi and gets the win. Then Bayley tries to be nice to Tamina, saying, "Hey, good job." But Tamina shakes her hand and then super kicks her. Then Sasha comes in trying to say, "Why'd you do that?" But we're friends because remember Team Bad back in 2015? And then Tamina's like, yeah, nope. Hits her with a Samoan drop. Tamina looks really strong for their Fatal 5-Way match at WrestleMania. It's what it needed to be. Now, this is my biggest gripe with the show. Pretty much my only biggest problem with the SmackDown show. So Triple H said in multiple interviews that Roman Reigns is out of WrestleMania and they're going to do something unique to get him out of his WrestleMania match with Goldberg. This thing that's going to be unique is Michael Cole just announced that Strowman will be facing Goldberg. No explanation why Roman's out of the match. That's it.
It's very unique. Yeah, uniqueness was Michael Cole announcing it. There you go.
Mm-hmm. Don't see a point in it. I mean, what could have been better is if Roman's there, instead of saying, "Hey, Roman, go home," just do a 10-second thing with Roman just laying on the floor saying, he's out, or something like that. Well, Goldberg's in the ring at WrestleMania, and then out comes Braun. Done. Don't even need to announce it. Or just say, Roman Reigns, because of the coronavirus, can't wrestle without him being a risk to his immune system. Just say what it is. But no, they're too good for that. Right after that, the Ric Flair match between Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 24 is next. They go through two commercials. It's a very good match. It's a very emotional match, obviously, because Ric Flair's retirement match, even though he wrestled a good 10 more times in TNA after that. But this was his WWE retirement match. So after the match, Tucker and Otis are seen backstage. Otis gets a text and leave. Then Tucker has a match with Dolph Ziggler next. Tucker is very much the aggressive one to start the match, which is he was just overpowering Ziggler. But thanks to Ziggler's grappling skills and technician, and him being a very good technician, he's able to take control and ground the much bigger Tucker. After missing a shoulder tackle, Tucker is sent into the ring post, and then Ziggler hits a DDT when we head to our first break. Back from the break, Ziggler is still in control, but Tucker is making his comeback. Tucker is destroying Ziggler on the outside until he finally brings him back in. He actually takes apart the steel stairs by throwing him into it. He lands a sidewalk slam inside the ring for a two count when Ziggler gets his foot on the ropes. Ziggler rolls on the outside, rakes the eyes of Tucker, and hits a zigzag on the steel stairs for a disqualification. And then he was going to take the other part of the stairs and just start whacking it on Tucker when Mandy Rose and Sonya come out. Otis also comes out to make the save. Mandy's saying, "What are you doing?" And then for the past 2 months, we've been getting looks to be Ali's glove thing, saying, "The truth will be heard." The truth will be heard. Then we got to a video of a guy wearing a mask. Not really wearing a mask. He's wearing a hood. We can't see his face. And he said in a disordered voice, "The truth will be heard." Press the video. And we see Mandy about to leave for her date with Otis. But then Sonya grabs Mandy's phone while Mandy's not there. Texts Otis saying, "I'm going to be a little late." Like we saw 2 or 3 months ago. Or Valentine's Day. And when she comes back, she deletes all the messages. Then we see Sonya and Dolph Ziggler talking, saying, "We're both going to get what we want." I don't know what Sonya wants, but Dolph Ziggler wants Mandy. And Mandy walks away.
I guess Sonya's just like, "Dang, I don't like Otis.
I guess
he's a big guy. I don't like him."
I guess so. I never really... I don't understand it.
I mean, the only other way you could go with it is... she was worried that Otis was going to start kind of replacing her.
Yeah.
She's spending time with him. But they don't make it clear, so we're just kind of
we're going to find out soon, potentially.
We will find out at the grandest performance center of them all.
Absolutely.
Maybe. We'll see.
So Mandy walks away. Ziggler tries to escape and barely makes it past Otis. Then Daniel Bryan versus Shinsuke Nakamura is next. Sami Zayn is on commentary yet again, which I like. I like Sami Zayn on commentary. Match starts with some nice mat wrestling, submission holds, and stiff strikes. Daniel Bryan takes out Shinsuke with a double flying knee from the top rope and brings him back in and hits a nice missile dropkick. Takes Shinsuke to the top rope and tries to hit a Hurricane Rana, but is countered into a flying knee. Shinsuke is down in control with a sliding suplex when we head to a break. Daniel Bryan tries to get a comeback going after a clothesline, starts to hit the yes kicks, but missed the 10th kick, and Shinsuke starts hitting some more stiff knees to the head. Shinsuke begins to land some yes kicks of his own, but Daniel Bryan counters the last one and kicks Nakamura in the arm for a close 2 count. Shinsuke is looking for the Kinshasa. Bryan gets Nakamura into a half crab submission, but Shinsuke is able to get to the bottom rope and break the hold. Both men are going for arm bars, but both of them were able to counter each other. Then Bryan switches from an armbar into the S-lock, but then Cesaro comes in to get the DQ. It was a very good match. This makes me wonder if this was a 10-minute match or even like an 8-minute match, what is the possibility they could do at a pay-per-view? Golly. The heels take out everyone. All three men land their finishes on Bryan. Cesaro first hits the neutralizer, then Kinshasa, and then the Huluva kick. So obviously we're getting Daniel Bryan versus Sami Zayn. Really excited for it. Give him 20 minutes. And I'll be happy. Then we have the final segment of SmackDown. John Cena is out to see if he will accept the Fiend's challenge from last week. Cena says he has not been told a single thing about what a Firefly Funhouse match is. Cena says that his WrestleMania starting tomorrow will be the most viewed and most talked about show in WWE history because no one knows what's going to happen. He says the Fiend thrives on uncertainty and panic. He says he will not panic. He's not scared of the Fiend. He will squash him and finish what he started 6 years ago. He doesn't care what a bootleg Mr. Rogers thinks will happen. The Fiend has given himself an advantage, but it doesn't matter because Cena will still overcome it and win. He also says Bray Wyatt is not even on the level below me, saying that Bray Wyatt is way down there. Then out comes all of Wyatt's puppets are on the outside where the fans are, saying that after the Fiend is done with you, they will play with Cena forever. The lights go out and the Fiend is shown on that porch where Elias fell off last week. They have a stare off until normal Bray Wyatt comes up behind Cena yelling in his ear, "Let me in." Lights go out again. He's gone. End of show. Great, great segment right there.
I love that segment.
It makes me really excited for what's going to happen at WrestleMania between those two. Because with it being filmed at a different location, all the stuff, it's going to be really interesting what they do with that, to say the least. All right, well, now we got our WrestleMania predictions. I'm on Wikipedia right now. I'm just going to go through all 16 matches, and we'll just say what exactly we're thinking. All right, who's winning, Rhea Ripley or Charlotte Flair?
That's honestly a good one. I don't know.
I could go either way with this match, honestly.
Yeah, I really have no idea. I'm probably going to say Charlotte Flair for this one, though, because I think her having matches at WrestleMania, I mean, like on NXT and potentially putting over another star from NXT, whether it be a Candice LeRae or Bianca Belair, is best for that brand. And potentially could give them some ratings here in the next coming weeks. So I'm going to say Charlotte Flair.
See, I could go either way with this one because, like you said, I could see them building Charlotte and Bianca for that NXT title.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, at the same time, like, who do you think Rhea could face in NXT?
Oh, she pretty much faced a lot of the people, so that's why I think she could be the main roster.
I know a lot of people want her to just move up and maybe go to SmackDown, possibly, if they're going to keep Shayna on Raw.
Yeah. And then potentially later you have the Shayna Ripley rematch. There you go, at Survivor Series.
Of other title changes, though, I think Rhea's retaining, though.
Okay. Bentley, how you feeling?
I'm going to go for Charlotte on this one.
Okay. 2 Charlottes, 1 Rhea. All right. Let's go for Otis and Ziggler. I don't see how Otis doesn't win this.
Unless Vince wants to go with the storyline that nice guys finished last.
Well, they've been doing that for a whole month, so that's why I think Otis will finally get his WrestleMania moment and be with Mandy.
I think tonight kind of changed that. I think Otis is going to possibly setting up for maybe a mixed tag match
with Ziggler.
So
you're also thinking Otis?
Yeah.
I'm definitely saying Otis.
All right, the Kabuki Warriors versus Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross.
I'm
going for Bliss and Cross. I don't know.
I
could care less about this.
Those titles for a long time.
I could care less about this.
They've been pushing them more. It's like singles acts more and more the past couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So I could see them easily losing the titles. Maybe one of them turns face and one turns heel. I could see them just going off and doing singles stuff.
Yeah, I'm going for Bliss and Cross.
All right, all three Bliss and Cross. Let's go for Sammy versus Daniel Bryan. I'm probably going to go for Bryan here, but this feud won't end.
Yeah, I'm going to say Bryan on this one.
I'll say Bryan. The only way I could see it sucks because that was Sammy's first really big title. I think the moment
he got the title, I'm fine with it.
I feel like the match is going to work where Gulak comes out with Daniel Bryan. And, of course, Sammy has Shinsuke and Cesaro with him. I feel like they're going to get in some shenanigans and get taken out from the ringside, and it's just going to be the two of them. And the way Sami Zayn's been booked over the past year, 2 years, I don't think he really stands a chance against Daniel Bryan.
We'll have to see. All right, Edge versus Randy Orton.
I don't think there's any way that Edge doesn't win this.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, unless they want to savor the moment and wait till SummerSlam because there's still a couple matches on his contract.
I see them probably going for like maybe Edge versus Rollins at SummerSlam.
But I think Edge didn't return to this just to lose after this big build. So yeah, I agree. I'll pick Edge.
I'm thinking Edge wins this one and then maybe going on to face a newer guy like Styles or something.
Maybe. Yeah.
All right, Elias and Corbin. Oh, I could care less. We have
don't really.
Let me put it this way. I feel they're gonna give it to Corbin. Because Corbin sat through that long program with Roman Reigns and took loss after loss to Roman, as to be expected. I think that kind of made him, just because they had him in that main event scene as a heel, as the top heel on SmackDown for the longest time, it just kind of makes sense for him to take out Elias, who's just kind of a... He's kind of just a... What's the word I'm looking for? Kind of like a parlor act. I don't know if that makes sense. Yeah. He's just kind of there to hype the fans up, but when there's no fans, like...
All right, so we all agree on Corbin?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, we don't really... I mean, this is the easiest friggin' match on the show, I think. Alistair and Bobby. There's no way Alistair does not win.
Yeah, there's no
way Alistair. Alistair's winning.
All right. Well, that's a pretty easy one. Street Profits versus Austin Theory and Angel Garza. Again, don't see the Street Profits losing it. If it wasn't Andrade and Garza, I could see it. But with Garza out, I don't think Austin Theory wins the tag team championship on his first WrestleMania, on his first pay-per-view.
No, because there's no way that... I feel like after this is all said and done, Theory's going right back to NXT.
Good chance of that. Good chance of that.
I think Street Profits retain.
Yep.
And maybe if it was Andrade, it might be a different story, but...
I would put my money on Andrade and Garza if that was the case.
Yeah, but it's not. Mm-hmm. Sadly. Miz and Morrison versus The New Day versus The Usos. I'm pretty sure it's John Morrison versus Kofi versus one of the Usos. I don't know who's going to win this. I don't know if it's for the title. But I think if it's not for the title, Kofi wins it. If it is for the title, Morrison retains.
So I think regardless of... Oh, maybe. Okay. If it's for the titles, I think Usos definitely win because it would put them tying the New Day record-wise for holding those belts. And I think that would set up a really big match at SummerSlam between the two because they've been like
hinting. Okay, so you're saying the Uso?
Yes.
All right, Ben.
I'm going to also say Usos.
All right, I'm saying Morrison. Okay. Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins. Again, don't see how Kevin Owens loses this.
The whole story of this isn't the whole thing like Kevin Owens, you've never had your WrestleMania moment. I've had countless. Yeah, Kevin Owens is winning, getting his quote unquote WrestleMania moment.
Authors of Pain, one of the Authors of Pain is injured and won't be back for like 7 months. And Buddy Murphy's sick, so there shouldn't be any shenanigans. It should be a 1-on-1 match, and Kevin Owens should win this. And Seth Rollins should go on, potentially face Well, the only thing is, he could face Drew McIntyre for the title. That's what I've been hearing. That could happen soon.
Maybe.
But either way, I think Kevin Owens wins here, though. Yeah. Bayley versus... Oh, no, sorry. Yeah, we'll go for this one. Bayley versus Lacey versus Naomi versus Sasha versus Tamina. Sasha.
I think Bayley retains. And I think we're going to see Sasha more and more become a face and leading to a singles match at SummerSlam.
I think you just have Sasha win here, and then you have Sasha and Bayley maybe later.
Bayley's gonna stay heel and Sasha's gonna become a face because fans love her.
All right,
I can see that happening, but I feel like Sasha wins it here.
AJ versus The Undertaker.
I mean, I feel safe with saying The Undertaker, but at the same time.
If we were picking, like, if who we want to win, I would pick AJ because it benefits him more as being, like, a heel, kind of a D-bag heel. But they're not going to have The Undertaker lose to AJ Styles. I don't think, at least. So I'm going to go with Undertaker for the safe bet.
I'm going to say The Undertaker, but yeah. I feel like for this one, we might not know. This one could be kind of...
A way they could do it. Just think about it, like, if it's the actual American Badass and AJ wins. I mean, it could be.
Yeah, well, if it's the American Badass, you can make the case, like, oh, it's the American Badass, it's not the...
It's not the Phenom.
The Phenom, yeah.
Yeah. So, but we'll see. I do agree that it will be The Undertaker. John Cena and The Fiend.
I mean... I really hope The Fiend wins this.
You would be dumb to not book The Fiend to win here. Yeah. I mean, knowing WWE, we don't know... But
we thought this. I for one thought the same thing back at WrestleMania 30. I thought there's no way Bray Wyatt loses here, and Bray Wyatt lost. But this is completely different. The Fiend was just champion, so he should not lose to John Cena here. So yeah,
we said the same thing with Goldberg.
They need to wash that nasty taste out of everyone's mouth after.
Yep, I agree.
Give The Fiend a win, especially it being a Firefly Funhouse match.
Mm-hmm.
Why would he not win in his home territory, home turf match he created?
Yep.
All right, Shayna Baszler versus Becky Lynch.
I'm going to go with Shayna.
Well, how's he's won? I don't see Becky Lynch winning. Goldberg and Braun.
I'm thinking Braun.
I think you just... I don't think they have Goldberg be there for that much longer. I think you just have Braun win it and then have Braun lose it.
Who knows? And plus, they can get a better match out of Braun and Roman anyway.
Either or, I'm not excited for it. Then the main event of probably night two, Brock Lesnar and Drew.
This is also one that, honestly, I feel like the safe one could be Drew, but they could also kind of flip the card on us. We don't know.
You gotta think, though, is back in WrestleMania 34, everyone and their mom thought Brock Lesnar was losing to Roman Reigns finally at WrestleMania, and that did not happen. So I thought...
No, it did not.
And I'm thinking now, there's no way Drew loses this. But I'm gonna go for Brock, because I think Drew's gonna lose this. Somehow, in some way, Drew might lose this. So I'm going Drew. I'm going Brock.
I'm going to stay on, hopefully, the safe side. I'll say Drew.
I'm going to stick with Drew.
And that is WrestleMania 36. 16 matches. Boy. 16 over. Matches. That is going to be...
This time it's roughly... It was Friday when we started it. I think last year we were watching... we saw probably one of the greatest matches last year with Adam Cole and Johnny Gargano 1.
Oh, yeah. That was just...
Takeover New York this time last year, so...
And now we don't got no takeover, and then we have to sit through 2 days of WrestleMania. Should be an interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, we get one NXT match.
Yeah. That's about all our WWE stuff. I believe I said last week that Dana White is 99.9% sure that they were going to have Habib versus Tony Ferguson. That match is completely off. Because Khabib is in Russia, and he cannot leave Russia. So they're looking to get a replacement for him. I think they're looking for Justin Gaethryl, whatever his name is. He's rumored to fight Conor McGregor in the upcoming months. So no Khabib and no Tony Ferguson, and I'm disappointed because this match has been booked 5 times and we've gotten it 0 times. I'm disappointed because that was going to be one of the best fights of the year. Golly, this dang coronavirus, man. It's ruining everything for me. It's ruining everything for me.
Yeah, it is.
All right, well, that's all the time we got.
Yep.
See ya.